Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello again, this is Randall Rickman from Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Time Magazine. This issue is dated March 18, 2019. Cover story, The Survivor. For 60 years, the Dalai Lama has been the face of Buddhism. China Has Another Plan, by Charlie Campbell. We go right to the beginning of the magazine, and we are at the main feature called For the Record, a one-page collection of news items, each one illustrated by a line drawing or a caption in bold or a combination of the two. In the upper right corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Hillary Clinton, former U.S. Secretary of State and 2016 Democratic presidential nominee on the 2020 presidential race. And the quotation from Hillary Clinton, quote, "I'm not running," unquote. In the middle right margin of the page is a story illustrated by the monetary amount in red, $100. Caption explains, sum sent to the Cuyahoga County Public Library in Ohio to cover late fees for a 1968 copy of Life magazine with the Beatles on the cover, which was returned with an apology note 5 decades after it was checked out. $100. That story is also illustrated by a line drawing of that magazine cover. The word Life, of course, is on the red block that denoted the logo for Life magazine, and the Fab Four are all on the cover. In the lower right corner of the page is the feature within a feature, Bad Week, Good Week. And Bad Week, Stone. Judge says Roger Stone's book and social media activity may violate gag order. Under Good Week, Rock. Actor Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson is buying his dad his dream home. Running along the bottom of the page is a story illustrated by the statistic in red, 1,529. Caption explains, number of live exotic turtles, some bound in duct tape, found inside 4 suitcases abandoned at the airport in Manila on March 3rd. In the middle left margin of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Fred and Cindy Warmbier, parents of Otto Warmbier, the student who died in 2017 after being held captive in North Korea for 17 months. The quotation from Fred and Cindy Warmbier, parents of Otto, quote, "Kim and his evil regime are responsible," unquote. Caption goes on to say, their March 1st statement came after Donald Trump said he believed Kim Jong-un's claim that he didn't know the 22-year-old was mistreated. Trump later tweeted that he, quote, of course, unquote, holds North Korea responsible for the death. In the upper left corner of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Mahmoud Abu Zio, Egyptian photojournalist known as Shao Kahn, after being released from prison on March 4th. And the quotation in bright red from Mahmoud Abu Ziyad, quote, "I feel like I'm flying," unquote. Caption goes on to say, he spent more than 5 years behind bars for covering 2013 anti-government protests in Cairo. In the lower center of the page is a quotation, a story illustrated by a quotation from Ty Cobb, former Trump White House lawyer, when ABC Radio asked his opinion of special counsel Robert Mueller, citing Mueller's service in the Vietnam War. In the quotation from Ty Cobb, former Trump White House lawyer, quote, an American hero, unquote. In the upper center of the page is a story illustrated by a quotation from Oprah Winfrey, media mogul and child sex abuse survivor, in a special that aired after the HBO documentary Leaving Neverland. The documentary, again, Leaving Neverland. And the quotation from Oprah Winfrey, in all black and in caps, quote, this moment transcends Michael Jackson. It is much bigger than any one person, unquote. Caption goes on to say, she interviewed its two subjects who say the pop star sexually abused them when they were children. That's the entire content of the page for the record. Moving ahead, we are now in the major opening section called The Brief. And here we have the major feature called News Ticker, a stack of three news items in the right margin of the page. Top item, McSally testifies about sexual assault. Arizona Republican Senator Martha McSally said at a March 6th Senate hearing on sexual assault in the military that she was raped by a superior officer while serving in the Air Force and did not report the attack because she, quote, didn't trust the system at the time, unquote. She is the second GOP senator this year to come out as a survivor of sexual assault. Middle item, Pope to open Holocaust-era archives early. Pope Francis announced March 4th that archives on Pope Pius XII, accused of staying silent during the Holocaust, would be opened in 2020, 8 years earlier than scheduled. Jewish groups that had pressured the Vatican to do so while Holocaust survivors were still alive welcomed the news. Bottom item, Trump kills trade privilege for India. President Donald Trump said March 4th he would remove India from a program that lowers U.S. duties on exports from 121 countries. India previously received exemptions on goods worth $5.6 billion. Trump has frequently criticized the country for its high tariffs. Moving ahead, and we are now in the major section called The View. And we have the sidebar feature called Short Reads. Time explains highlights from stories on time.com/ideas. And again, there are three items stacked one on top of the other. Top item, Trump's defeat through victory. The president's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, told Congress on February 27th that Trump saw his campaign as, quote, the greatest infomercial in political history, unquote. This indifference to winning, suggests Times former editor-in-chief Nancy Gibbs, helped make Trump a successful candidate. Quote, he could take any risk, break any rule, because he literally had nothing to lose, unquote. Middle item, the privilege of security clearance. Former CIA officer Emily Brandwin, getting her top secret clearance was challenging and exhausting. If Jared Kushner got his because his father-in-law ordered it, she writes, it's a serious threat to our national security and, quote, a slap in the face to public servants, unquote. Bottom item, reconsidering a common death ritual. Since her mother's death over 20 years ago, Sally Tisdale has come to believe that embalming makes it harder for us to mourn and causes us greater pain. Quote, "What good is served by turning away from the fact of loss?" Unquote. And that was the entire content of Short Reads. And again, Time Explains, highlights from stories on time.com/ideas. On the facing page, the regular feature, The Risk Report, by Ian Bremmer. His headline, "An Israeli General Presents the First Real Threat to Netanyahu in a Decade." Quote, "No Israeli leader is a king," unquote, says Benny Gantz, the man hoping to unseat Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. On April 9th, Israelis will go to the polls for an election that will decide whether it's time for the leader many know as King Bibi to leave the stage. Netanyahu is fighting for a new mandate and a fifth term. This may well be Bibi's last stand. The country's attorney general has announced he intends to indict him on fraud, bribery, and breach of trust charges in 3 separate criminal cases, although formal charges can't be filed until after a hearing that won't begin until votes have been cast. Gantz, Netanyahu's former army chief, has mounted a formidable campaign, partnering with Netanyahu's former finance minister, Yair Lapid, to form a centrist alliance. Netanyahu, meanwhile, has been forced to turn to far-right parties to find potential coalition partners. Gantz is a compelling character. He lacks Netanyahu's charisma and grandiosity. He has tried to appeal to voters as a fresh face, free from past political entanglements. The child of Holocaust survivors, he tends to speak softly and carefully, even when calling the prime minister a would-be monarch. It's an effective contrast with Netanyahu, a man of cigars and champagne. Quote, "I have always kept my hands clean," unquote, Gantz says. Despite sharply contrasting personal styles, it's unclear how much they differ on actual policy issues. In part, that's because Gantz grants very few interviews and remains deliberately vague on economic plans. It's also because, on security policy, he has worked hard to convince voters that he's neither soft nor a man of the left, as his former boss portrays him. Like Netanyahu, Gantz has avoided committing himself for or against an independent Palestinian state. But he also wants voters to believe he'll be as uncompromising as Netanyahu in facing down adversaries. He talks tough on Hamas, Iran, and Lebanon's Hezbollah. He boasts about the aggressiveness of operations he commanded in Gaza and the number of, quote, terrorists, unquote, his troops have killed there. He promises to keep Jerusalem undivided, the Golan Heights defended, and the West Bank under full Israeli security control. He refers to his alliance with Lapid as blue and white for the colors of Israel's flag. In a country where a dozen army chiefs have entered politics and 2 have become prime minister, national security remains a national priority. And Gantz's strategy makes sense because Netanyahu's tough stance on security has worked for Israel, even as it infuriates his critics, foreign and domestic. It might not be enough. There's a reason Netanyahu is just 1 election victory away from replacing Founding Father David Ben-Gurion as the longest-serving prime minister in Israel's history. He's a shrewd politician with both a talent for exploiting grievance and a record of genuine accomplishment. Over the past decade, he has successfully wooed the presidents of both the U.S. and Russia. He has improved relations with the Arab world without offering much to Palestinians. He has courted India and China. Israel has remained secure, and its economy has proved resilient and strong. His party, Likud, has held the prime minister's office for 31 of the past 42 years. Gantz, on the other hand, has no political experience. But in an era when voters in the U.S., Britain, France, Italy, Brazil, Mexico, and elsewhere have voted against their political establishments in favor of transformative change, Israeli voters may look beyond policy proposals and past successes to boost a new voice. Entire article by Ian Bremmer. Also on this page in the right margin is, under the general heading Education, a headline that says, Why American Parents Can't Afford to Relax. Article by Matthias Dubke and Fabrizio Zavotti. They write, American parents are often told to be more like Scandinavians and encourage free play and discovery. But what many don't realize is that a lot of the way they raise their children is dictated by economics. Within the industrialized world, the U.S. has the highest income inequality. Education plays a big role. College-educated workers earn about twice as much, on average, as their less educated peers. Compare this with Sweden, where economic inequality is much lower, admissions are less competitive, and the gap in earnings between those who attend college and those who don't is narrower. If some of the choices of parents in the U.S. seem overly invasive, this merely reflects the high stakes in educational achievement. Instead of critiquing parents, Americans should press for policy changes, including access to high-quality preschool for all children, more equal school funding, and investments in vocational training. Only if they succeed will parents be able to embrace a more relaxed approach to raising their kids. That was written, and it was included and read in its entirety, by Matthias Dubke and Fabrizio Zlibotti. We come now to In the View, the major feature viewpoint, where the headline is, What Justice Looks Like for R. Kelly's Accusers. Article by Dream Hampton. Time notes, Hampton is the executive producer and showrunner for Lifetime's Surviving R. Kelly, and executive producer for HBO's It's a Hard Truth, Ain't It?, and BET's Finding Justice. Dream Hampton writes, When R. Kelly turned himself in to Chicago police last month after being charged with criminal sexual abuse, my Twitter mentions exploded, mostly with celebration. After he thrived professionally for years despite the numerous allegations against him, there was the sense that his accusers might finally see justice. But what does that exactly mean? As executive producer of Surviving R. Kelly, a documentary series aimed at shedding light on these women's stories, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this question. While it is an unquestionably good thing that R. Kelly may face consequences for what they claim he did to them, my feelings about the situation have been complicated. R. Kelly, who pleaded not guilty on all counts and was defiant in an interview with Gayle King that aired on CBS March 6th, faces up to 70 years behind bars. Many people believe that landing him there was my goal and the goal of the survivors who spoke to me, It was not. I ended each interview by asking the women what they'd want to say to him should he be watching. Without fail, each of them pleaded with him to, quote, get help, unquote, to, quote, just stop, unquote, hurting girls and women like them. Not one made it through our interview without being upended by her trauma and pain. Several needed breaks to regain their composure. It was wrenching. Yet, when they considered what justice might be for an accused serial predator, they never used the words jail or prison. They wished for him a healing, that he face and own the harm he has caused. When they talked of his needing help, I understood them to mean some combination of professional therapy and spiritual healing. In post-production, I scoured the footage for some departure, but no, each of them had given this answer. I wasn't entirely surprised. As black women, we understand that our criminal justice system is not just a broken one that denies black people justice, but also an extension of slavery built to warehouse black people. Historically, we've talked only about this system harming black men, denying all the ways that black women are targeted from girlhood. And although black feminists have tried to disrupt this self-subjugating, we still think of issues like police violence, issues that affect all black people, as affecting only, quote, our black men, unquote. This is our default, and it is this deep hard wiring that informs these women's compassion for R. Kelly. But the women I interviewed were also articulating a principle that many of us who have been working to dismantle the prison industrial complex often call for, a restorative justice process. This requires that, at the very least, the harm caused be acknowledged, and I don't believe prisons are a place where such rehabilitation can happen. I struggle to call myself an abolitionist, but I am also always contending with the tension and seeking protection from a system that continues to do the black community so much harm. And yet, I also understand why so many people who support R. Kelly's accusers think his being back in that same system may somehow mean justice is coming. We move on to include more other material as well, such as this on the facing page under the general heading of health. The headline is, as measles outbreaks continue, pro-vaccine policies get a voice. Article by Jamie Ducharme. Ethan Lindenberger went 18 years without getting a single vaccine. His mother, fueled by anti-vaccine content she read on Facebook, believed that vaccines caused autism and brain damage, he says. But after researching the science, the Ohio teen decided in December, when he became an adult, to catch up on his shots. Quote, addressing misinformation properly can cause change, as it did for me, unquote, Lindenberger said on March 5th, before a Senate committee meeting about vaccines and preventable disease outbreaks. Vaccine skepticism, often spread through social media, is driving the U.S.'s ongoing outbreaks of measles, a disease that has sickened 206 people in 11 states this year. But pro-vaccine voices like Lindenberger's are now the ones getting more attention. Sites like Facebook, YouTube, and Pinterest have recently taken steps to curb anti-vaccine content. And in several states, including Washington, where measles outbreaks are fierce, lawmakers are moving to tighten lax laws that allow parents to opt out of vaccinating their children for personal or philosophical reasons. But support is not universal. Lawmakers in Arizona are trying to weaken laws there to make exemptions even easier. In February, outgoing Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb hinted at someday instating federal vaccine policies if state exemptions continue to allow outbreaks, a proposal criticized by both states' rights and anti-vaccine advocates. There are also signs that vaccine skepticism is starting to wane as the outbreaks intensify. In Clark County, Washington, where about 70 people have gotten measles, clinicians requested 6 times more measles vaccines this January than last, health officials said. In Brooklyn, where an outbreak has sickened 121 members of the Orthodox Jewish community, 7,000 people have gotten shots after urging from city officials. Changing policies are only starting to catch up to science. Health agencies have steadfastly supported immunization for years, and research has many times debunked the discredited notion that vaccines cause autism. In March, a large new study again found no link between the measles vaccine and autism. In the U.S., quote, as many as 90,000 adults die each year from vaccine-preventable diseases, unquote, says Dr. Sandra Fryhofer, an Atlanta-based internist and past president of the American College of Physicians. Quote, we know that vaccines save lives, unquote. That was the entire article by Jamie Ducharme. Sharing the page here is the sidebar feature called You Asked, and the headline is, What's the Best Machine at the Gym? Article written by Markham Held. Most exercise machines are engineered to train specific muscles, so each is effective in its own way. But if you want total body training in the least amount of time, the rowing machine, air bike, and stair climbing machine are great options, says Chris Gagliardi, a certified personal trainer and weight management coach with the American Council on Exercise. This article goes on now to explicate each of those items. On a rowing machine, quote, you drive through your hips and legs to start the rowing movement. You have to activate your core to maintain posture, and then you have arm, shoulder, and back involvement, unquote, he says. Those motions make it a good aerobic workout that also trains a diverse set of muscles. Second item, the air bike. Also provides an excellent combination of lower body training, parenthetically a given for any kind of cycling, and aerobics. Pedaling in foot straps works your knee and hip muscles, Gagliardi says, while the push-pull action of the upright handles gets your upper body involved. Final item. Another versatile machine, the stair climber, also builds functional strength, meaning it works the muscles and movements you use frequently in everyday life. Especially as you age and poor balance or stability become concerns, functional exercises are a great way to maintain your physical capabilities. And that was the entire article. And again, those three machines mentioned, rowing machine, air bike, stair climber. And going ahead now, and we are going to the milestones page, lead item under died, Luke Perry, cool incarnate, observance by Darren Starr, time notes, Starr is a creator of television shows, including Beverly Hills 90210. He is currently the showrunner of the sixth season of Younger. Darren Star writes, "The pilot of Beverly Hills 90210 had been shot, but the series was missing a secret ingredient, an avatar of cool. It seemed like an impossible role to fill until Luke Perry walked in the door. He was unforgettable from the moment I met him in the summer of 1990. Luke was taking time off from his day job when he came in to read for the role. One day he was paving parking lots, and the next day he was Dylan McKay. Dylan was a sensitive hunk, world-weary and wise beyond his years, with mysteries you could only guess at. Abandoned by his parents, he found his true family with the Walshes and the gang at West Beverly Hills High. Dylan was the wildest, most fascinating, truest friend you could ever have. Though he came from money, he thumbed his nose at the hypocrisy and privilege all around him. Luke created that iconic character by channeling his vulnerability, his strength, and his big heart." With apologies, your reader will repeat that particular sentence. "Though he came from money, he thumbed his nose at the hypocrisy and privilege all around him," meaning Dylan. "Luke created that iconic character by channeling his vulnerability, his strength, and his big heart. And despite the unexpected torrent of fame that followed, Luke, who died on March 4th at 52 after a stroke, always remained Luke. Soulful, sweet, and down to earth, he led a life that was a masterclass in graciousness and humility. The degree to which he touched us all, then and so many years later, is a tribute to his remarkable nature. I am blessed to have known him and to have worked with him, and am heartbroken by his passage." Observance by Darren Star, Luke Perry. That item is accompanied by a headshot. Caption says, "Perry in Las Vegas in 1994. And in the photo, Luke Perry is wearing a white T-shirt. Also on this page, under Died, Andre Previn, polymath composer. Observance by Abigail Abrams, who writes, "Andre Previn's impact on 20th century music was nothing short of sprawling. Previn, who died February 28th at 89, was a conductor, composer, pianist, and music director. He won 10 Grammy Awards and was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II in 1996. His work touched genres ranging from classical and jazz to the popular fare of Broadway and Hollywood. It was this last arena where he first made a name. A child prodigy, Previn began working on MGM film scores while still in high school. He won 4 Oscars for his work and enjoyed the stardom that came with his increased profile, which only grew when he married Mia Farrow in 1970, after a highly publicized affair that led to Farrow's leaving Frank Sinatra. Turning to classical music, he was named musical director of the Houston Symphony in 1967, later leading the London and Pittsburgh Symphonies and the Los Angeles Philharmonic. His long career served as a reminder that music can transcend categories, and that a classical composer can still be a pop culture figure. His passion, it was clear, rose above changing trends or times. Quote, I don't care where I am, unquote, he once said. Quote, I compose, unquote. Observance by Abigail Abrams, Andre Previn, composer. Underreturned. Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido to Venezuela on March 4th after he defied a court-imposed travel ban in order to canvass support in nearby countries. President Nicolas Maduro had implied that Guaido could be arrested if he returned. Under published, a March 5th report saying HIV was undetectable in a UK patient after a stem cell transplant, the second case of its kind. Doctors said it was too early to say he had been cured. Under launched, the Crew Dragon spacecraft by SpaceX on March 2nd. The ship, which successfully docked at the International Space Station on March 3rd, is the first American spacecraft capable of carrying astronauts to launch since NASA retired its space shuttles. Under announced, that the FDA commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, will resign by April. President Trump appointed him in 2017. Under suspended, large-scale military drills by the U.S. and South Korea, the two countries said, on March 2nd. The move is part of Trump's efforts to ease tensions with North Korea. Under announced, that hospitals in England will offer free pads and tampons to patients starting this summer by England's National Health Service on March 3rd. And that was the entire content of Milestones. On the facing page is another version of the mini-feature news ticker, again in sidebar form, stacking three news items, one on top of the other. Top item, Trudeau scandal deepens. Jane Philpott, head of the Canadian Treasury Board, on March 4th, became the second member of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's cabinet to resign as scandal threatens his popularity ahead of October elections. Trudeau denies a former minister's allegation that he pressured her to block the prosecution of a friendly company. Middle item. No charges in California police shooting. The two police officers who fatally shot Stephon Clark, an unarmed black man, in his grandmother's Sacramento backyard last year, will not face criminal prosecution, the county district attorney said March 2nd. The decision prompted protests in the city, where dozens were arrested on March 4th. Final item. Algeria's president to run despite protests. Defying 2 weeks of protests calling for him to step down, Algeria's president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika, is still seeking a fifth term in April elections. The 82-year-old hasn't made a public speech since 2014, and Algerians worry that elites are running the country in his stead. And moving ahead, we are now at the cover story. The title is Test of Faith. Subtext says, 60 years in exile made the Dalai Lama the world's most famous Buddhist, but China wants to name his successor. Article by Charlie Campbell, Dateline, Dharamsala, India. Morning has broken on the cedar-strewn foothills of the Himalayas. His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama sits in meditation in his private chapel in Dharamsala, a ramshackle town perched on the upper reaches of North India's Kangra Valley. Rousing slowly, he unfolds his legs with remarkable agility for a man of 83, finds the red felt slippers placed neatly beneath his seat, and heads outside to where a crowd has already gathered. Around 300 people brave the February chill to offer white kata scarves and receive the Dalai Lama's blessing. There's a group from Bhutan in traditional checkered dress. A man from Thailand has brought his Liverpool FC scarf, seeking divine benediction for the UK soccer team's title bid. Two women lose all control as they approach the Dalai Lama's throne and are carried away, shaking in rapture, clutching prayer beads and muttering incantations. The Dalai Lama engages each visitor like a big kid, slapping bald pates, grabbing onto one devotee's single braid, waggling another's nose. Every conversation is peppered with giggles and guffaws. Quote, "We 7 billion human beings, emotionally, mentally, physically, are the same," unquote, he tells Time in a 90-minute interview. Quote, "Everyone wants a joyful life," unquote. His own has reached a critical point. The Dalai Lama is considered a living Buddha of compassion, a reincarnation of the Bodhisattva Shinrizig, who renounced nirvana in order to help mankind. The title only signified the preeminent Buddhist monk in Tibet, a remote land about twice the size of Texas that sits veiled behind the Himalayas. But starting in the 17th century, the Dalai Lama also wielded full political authority over the secretive kingdom. That changed with Mao Zedong's conquest of Tibet, which brought the rule of the current Dalai Lama to an end. On March 17, 1959, he was forced to escape to India. In the 6 decades since, the leader of the world's most secluded people has become the most recognizable face of a religion practiced by nearly 500 million people worldwide. But his prominence extends beyond the borders of his own faith, with many practices endorsed by Buddhists, like mindfulness and meditation, permeating the lives of millions more around the world. What's more, the lowly farmer's son, named as a, quote, God King, unquote, in his childhood, has been embraced by the West since his exile. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1989 and was heralded in Martin Scorsese's 1997 biopic. The cause of Tibetan self-rule remains alive in Western minds, thanks to admirers ranging from Richard Gere to the Beastie Boys to Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who calls him a, quote, messenger of hope for millions of people around the world, unquote. Yet, as old age makes travel more difficult, and as China's political clout has grown, the Dalai Lama's influence has waned. Today, the Chinese Communist Party, parenthetically CCP, that drove him out of Tibet, is working to co-opt Buddhist principles, as well as the succession process itself. Officially atheist, the party has proved as adaptable to... Restart that with apologies. Officially atheist, the party has proved as adaptive to religion as it is to capitalism, claiming a home for faith in the nationalism Beijing has activated under Xi Jinping. In January, the CCP announced it would, quote, sinicize, unquote, Buddhism. That could also be pronounced, quote, sinicize, unquote, Buddhism. Over the next 5 years, completing a multi-million dollar rebranding of the faith as an ancient Chinese religion. From Pakistan to Myanmar, Chinese money has rejuvenated ancient Buddhist sites and promoted Buddhist studies. Beijing has spent $3 billion transforming the Nepalese town of Lumbini, birthplace of Lord Buddha, into a luxury pilgrimage site, boasting an airport, hotels, convention center, temples, and a university. China has hosted World Buddhist Forums since 2006, inviting monks from all over the world. Although not, of course, the world's most famous, Beijing still sees the Dalai Lama as a dangerous threat and swiftly rebukes any nation that entertains him. That appears to be working, too. Once the toast of capitals around the world, the Dalai Lama has not met a world leader since 2016. Even India, which has granted asylum to him as well as to about 100,000 other Tibetans, is not sending senior representatives to the diaspora's commemoration of his 60th year in exile, citing a, quote, very sensitive time, unquote, for bilateral relations with Beijing. Every U.S. president since George H.W. Bush has made a point of meeting with the Dalai Lama until Donald Trump, who is in negotiations with China over reforming its state-controlled economy. Still, the Dalai Lama holds out hope for a return to his birthplace. Despite his renown and celebrity friends, he remains a man aching for home and a leader removed from his people. Having retired from, quote, political responsibility, unquote, within the exiled community in 2011, he merely wants, quote, the opportunity to visit some holy places in China for pilgrimage, unquote, he tells Time, quote, I sincerely just want to serve Chinese Buddhists, unquote. Despite that, the CCP still regards the Dalai Lama as a, quote, wolf in monk's robes, unquote, and a dangerous, quote, splittist, unquote, as Chinese officials call him. He has rejected calls for Tibetan independence since 1974, acknowledging the geopolitical reality that any settlement must keep Tibet within the People's Republic of China. He instead advocates for greater autonomy and religious and cultural freedom for his people. It matters little. Quote, it's hard to believe a return would happen at this point, unquote, says Gray Tuttle, a professor of modern Tibetan studies at Columbia. Quote, China holds all the cards, unquote. The boy born Lamo Tondup was identified as the 14th incarnation of the Dalai Lama at just 2 years old, when a retinue of top lamas, or senior Buddhist Tibetan monks, followed a series of oracles and prophecies to his village in northeastern Tibet. The precocious toddler seemed to recognize objects belonging to the 13th Dalai Lama, prompting the lamas to proclaim him the celestial heir. At age 4, he was carried on a golden palanquin into the Tibetan capital, Lhasa, and ensconced in its resplendent Potala Palace. A daily routine of spiritual teaching by top religious scholars followed. Quote, sometimes my tutor kept a whip to threaten me, unquote, the Dalai Lama recalls, smiling. Quote, the whip was yellow in color, as it was for a holy person, the Dalai Lama, but I knew that if the whip was used, it made no difference. Holy pain, unquote. It was a lonely childhood. The Dalai Lama rarely saw his parents and had no contact with peers of his own age, save his elder brother, Lobsang Samden, who served as head of household. Despite his tutor's focus on spiritual matters, or perhaps because of it, he was fascinated by science and technology. He would gaze from the Patala's roof at Lhasa street life through a telescope. He took part and reassembled, I'll repeat that with the correction, he took apart and reassembled a projector and camera to see how they functioned. Quote, he continually astonished me by his powers of comprehension, his pertinacity, and his industry, unquote, wrote the Austrian mountaineer Heinrich Haro, who became the Dalai Lama's tutor and was one of six Europeans permitted to live in Lhasa at the time. Today, the Dalai Lama proudly describes himself as, quote, half Buddhist monk, half scientist, unquote. The Dalai Lama was only supposed to assume a political role on his 18th birthday, with a regent ruling until then. But the arrival of Mao's troops to reclaim dominion over Tibet in 1950 caused the Tibetan government to give him full authority at just 15. With no political experience or knowledge of the outside world, he was thrust into negotiations with an invading army while trying to calm his fervent but poorly armed subjects. Conditions worsened over the next 9 years of occupation. Chinese proclamations calling Lord Buddha a, quote, reactionary, unquote, enraged a pious populace of 2.7 million. By March 1959, rumors spread that the Dalai Lama would be abducted or assassinated, fomenting a doomed popular uprising that looked likely to spill into serious bloodshed. Quote, just in front of the Patala Palace, on the other side of the river, there was a Chinese artillery division, unquote, the Dalai Lama recalls. Quote, previously, all the guns were covered, but around the 15th or 16th, all the covers were removed. So then we knew it was very serious. On the 17th morning, I decided to escape, unquote. The two-week journey to India was fraught as Chinese troops hunted the party across some of the world's most unforgiving terrain. The Dalai Lama reached India incognito atop a zoo, a cross between a yak and a cow. That is spelled, by the way, D-Z-O. Every building in which he slept en route was immediately consecrated as a chapel, but the land he left behind was ravaged by Mao's disastrous Great Leap Forward and Cultural Revolution. Both phrases are capitalized, Great Leap Forward and Cultural Revolution. Hundreds of thousands died. By some reckonings, 99.9% of the country's 6,400 monasteries were destroyed. Tibet's desire to remain isolated and undisturbed had served it poorly. The kingdom had no useful allies, the government of Lhasa having declined to establish official diplomatic relations with any other nation or join international organizations. The Dalai Lama's supplications, were thus easy to ignore. Tibet had remained staunchly neutral during World War II, and the U.S. was already mired in a fresh conflict on the Korean Peninsula. Quote, first, Indian Prime Minister Pandit Nehru told me, interior quote, America will not fight the Chinese communists in order to liberate Tibet. So sooner or later, you have to talk with the Chinese government. Close quote and end quote, the Dalai Lama recalls. When Tibetans first followed the Dalai Lama into India, they lived with bags packed and did not build proper houses, believing a glorious return would come at a moment's notice. It never did. Four decades of conversations between China and exiled Tibetan leadership have led nowhere. Consolatory talks began in the 1970s between the Dalai Lama's envoys and reformist Chinese leader Deng Xiaoping, and continued under Deng's successor Jiang Zemin. The talks stipulated that Tibetan independence was off the table. But even so, the drawn-out process was suspended in 1994, and after briefly resuming in the 2000s, is again at a standstill. Meanwhile, Tibet remains firmly under the thumb of Beijing. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it, and please be sure to listen next time. This is your loyal, if faulty, reader, Randall Rickman, reading for Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. That's TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Number again, 919-832-5138. So long until next time, when once again you'll be joined by Randall Rickman, yours truly, and thanking you in advance for your forbearance and patience with your loyal reader. Please join us next time for Time Magazine.